An original Seahawk. We're talking day one back to the Jack Patera days. You may be a little more familiar with him as the radio voice of the 3-0 franchise on Cairo AM 710 in Seattle, 97.3 FM. On Twitter, it's at Cairo7Seattle. We welcome in Steve Rabel. Mr. Rabel, how are you and yours doing during these most, let's call them, unique times?
They are unique indeed, Steve. Thank you very much for asking. We're doing great. We're protecting ourselves as we hope everybody else does. And frankly, we're just not going out and doing a whole heck of a lot. Probably like a lot of people, a lot of your listeners, same thing. You go to the grocery, you go to the drugstore. But we're trying to lay pretty low, and looks like we're going to be doing this for the foreseeable future, including football games. We're not traveling this year with the team, the broadcast group, so we're staying close to home, and again, trying to protect ourselves until we can get a vaccine going.
You know, for those who might not be aware, you played ball at Georgia Tech when they were an independent. You hail from Louisville, so being from that part of the country, now all of a sudden you fast forward, you're a second round draft pick of a team way out in a place called Seattle, which in those days was not exactly a bustling major city. What were your early impressions of Seattle upon, you know, arriving there to live your dream of playing pro ball?
Well, truly, I hadn't been west of the Mississippi, so that part of the equation was going to be probably solved. I was getting a lot more interest from teams like the Cowboys and the Packers. Actually flew me to Green Bay to check my knee out, because I had surgery my senior season. Cincinnati Bengals as well, which would have been, quite frankly, a treat, to the extent that my parents, you know, had still lived in Louisville. It was an hour long, maybe a 90-minute drive down the Ohio River, and they could have come to see all the games. And so as it turns out, I end up in South Alaska. And my first trip out here, we had a rookie orientation camp for over a weekend, a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I believe it was in May of 76 after the draft. And we flew out. You know, they sent me a ticket, and I flew out, and I got in a cab at the airport at SeaTac, and the cab driver brought me, for those of you who know Seattle, Highway 99 is sort of the back way to get into downtown or go to the airport, and that way you can avoid Interstate 5, which tends to get kind of crowded. And we came up over a rise, and there is this city. Now, you're right. It's not nearly the city then as it was as it is now. But still, there were a pretty fair number of buildings. The King Dome was sitting there in full view, and there's Puget Sound in the mountains. I just thought, my goodness, I've come to, you know, God's country. This is spectacular. And I was kind of right. You know, it's been just a terrific place for me. I met my wife here. We've been married 39 years. I've made my bones here. I just retired from Cairo TV after 38 years. So this is a wonderful thing for me. And of course, being associated with the franchise now, this is my 45th year. So I'd like to still be around after 50. We'll knock on wood and hope that continues.
Nothing like South Alaska in the autumn, you know that.
That's right.
You know, when you work in this business, there are kind of landmark occasions. You know, you're behind the mic for an NFL franchise. That's unique enough. But as you took over play-by-play your second year, 2005, you know, you had lost in the wild card round 2 years in a row, and then beat Washington, Carolina, and you're Super Bowl bound. What was your level of, wow, I'm going to get to call the biggest game in this country?
I'd be lying to you, Steve, if I told you I wasn't excited. And, you know, every coach that I've ever been around always talks about, well, this is just another game. It's the next game on the way. But once you get to the Super Bowl, there is no next game. That's it. So it was pretty exciting. And Mike Holmgren is a good friend and has been a good friend for a lot of years. And so, you know, we spent some time talking during that whole week back in Detroit. My wife came back for the game. And as it turned out, truly, I believe that the Seahawks were a better team all season long than the Pittsburgh Steelers. I thought we had, you know, more explosive ability, more talent, all those things. And we didn't play that well. Picked that weekend not to play very well. We had some injuries that hurt us. But it was just a thrill to be able to call that game. And, you know, we have a picture. It's kind of become a tradition at Super Bowls that our whole broadcast crew, along with our executive producer, and he's the director also of broadcasting for the Seahawks, Brian O'Connell, We take a picture down on the field with the lights of Super Bowl behind us, and there are, what, three pictures now hanging in our broadcast booth at CenturyLink Field from those games. I will tell you, it never gets old. I hope to be able to do it three or four more times before I retire and unable to do games anymore. It's just the pinnacle, and it's just such a great day all the way around, and especially when your team and your fans are involved.
You know, along those lines, as we continue with the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel, things at this level don't happen by accident. When you think back about a decade ago, Pete Carroll gets hired, then John Schneider, the playoff run in 2010, now going to have a ninth straight winning season. And remember, I bring this up, I'm not a homer, I'm a Giants fan, I was born and raised in New York, but you see these guys operate up close and personal. I mean, just how in sync are they? As, let's face it, they're the top coach GM combo in the league.
Without question, in my estimation. The only way you could be closer is if you were one and the same, if you were a Bill Belichick and you had complete control and you made all those decisions. This working relationship between these two guys started from the very first day that they were hired. Pete first, then John. Pete wanted to have some input into that because he did not, in his first two gigs as head coach, and he felt like the most important thing for him was, as you mentioned, that kind of chemistry, that ability to work together. And for both guys to be on the same page, I saw that kind of erode toward the end of Mike Holmgren's time with the Seahawks, where he and Tim Ruskell just kind of didn't see eye to eye on some of the draft choices and some of the personnel choices. Mike had some ideas. Ruskell had some other ideas. These two guys, if they do have differences, they work them out, and you see what the result is: Super Bowl championship, two Super Bowl trips back to back, a group of defensive players in 2013, the likes of which we may never see again. We were hoping this year we'd have a comparable group, and so far it's not been that way. So still a lot of things to do, but a lot of young players. But I just think that they're both in it for the same reason. They don't care who gets the credit. They just want to win football games and win championships.
Of course, everybody now is gushing about Russell Wilson, and why not?
Sure.
I was at the Rose Bowl for his last college game against Oregon. But so he's a third-round pick. Everybody figured he was going to back up Matt Flynn. But at what point did everybody within the organization, self-included, realize, yeah, this guy's not born to hold a clipboard, and he was going to become the centerpiece of this successful franchise?
You know, I think it was the fourth preseason game. I don't remember who we played now, but I just remember my broadcast partner at the time, Warren Moon, who knew Russell, and, you know, he had counseled a number of quarterbacks coming out, including Cam Newton and others. He had seen Russell play in college. He knew of his ability. And we just saw this young guy literally grow into the job before our eyes. Now, that didn't mean he was what he is today when the season opened that year in 2012. But what we saw was this young guy step up, want to learn, want to be better, work within the system that Pete kept them in. Remember, Pete kind of kept the reins on him through the first two-thirds of that season. And then finally, they kind of let loose. We went back to Chicago, and Russell and the team won a big game back in Chicago late in the season. Russ taking the team right down on in overtime to score and not giving the Bears a chance to get back in the game. That was when we all said, wow, this guy is really special. And then he just kept adding to that and adding to that. But, you know, early on, and John saw it when he was watching him play at Wisconsin and North Carolina State before that. He knew this guy had talent. He wasn't the kind of guy that you look at by the numbers and say, wow, you know, he's only 5'11 or 5'10 and a half. Could we make him a little bit bigger? No, that's not the way it works. But he sure has proven his ability, A, to lead his team, and he is as accurate a thrower as we have in the National Football League right now, and all you have to do is look at those statistics.
Oh, man, the deep ball he throws. I'm old enough to be thinking of, like, the Mad Bomber, Daryl LaMonica. I just love the way this kid throws a rainbow. You mentioned it, but the secondary, like you said, in the preseason, folks were talking that this might be the second coming. Then you lose a terrific young player in Marquise Blair. Quentin Dunbar tweaked his knee. We see a former Duck, Ugo Amadi, out there more. So what's the word from the coaches about the health there and maybe a little concern on the back end?
Well, you know, they're not going to say too much about that. You're just going to always. One thing I've learned about coaches, as well as the fact that the next game is the most important game, that the one that you're playing right now, is that the next man up. And so that's what Pete is going to expect of all of his defensive players, and Ken Norton Jr. of his defensive squad. You know, Jamal Adams tweaked that groin, and yep, we hope that he's going to be able to play, but I've had those things, and it's pretty painful, and it is tough to play. I mean, it's one thing, and I don't mean this to sound like offensive linemen can play hurt or whatever, but you're not making as many lateral moves and planting and exploding as you would be if you're a defensive back or a running back wide receiver with a groin injury. It's really difficult. So I'm hoping he's going to be able to play. But, you know, Marquise is gone for the season, and he was really just starting to come into his own. It was really, really unfortunate what happened. Guys are going to get banged up. Guys are going to bruise their knees. They're going to get sprained knees, and that's why you hope you have enough depth. I think we proved against the Cowboys that, you know, some guys can step in when they need to at the end of the game and still make big plays. Shaquem Griffin did at linebacker, broke up a pass and almost got himself a sack. And then you put one of the new kids, just literally activated off the practice squad, Ryan Neal, intercepts a ball in the end zone to end the game for the Seahawks. So, you know, you just deal with the hand you're dealt, as Pete, or as Chuck used to say, and play those guys knowing that, listen, they're well prepared, they're well coached. Now just get out there and make plays. And as Pete often says, don't get beat over the top, which happened twice last week. I don't think we'll see that many more times this year. I think that's something they're going to really coach to.
A couple final thoughts for the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel. You know, regardless of your loyalty, and you talk about injuries being part of the game, what we saw Sunday from Tristan Hill, the Cowboys, I mean, that's just a dirty play. And so what's the status of Chris Carson? And despite a huge win, how ticked off were folks around the organization?
They were pretty mad. I mean, I heard Pete use a little bit of language that I perhaps hadn't heard him use before. And I know that a number of Chris's teammates, K.J. Wright among them,
yep,
really unhappy about that. Now, here's one of the great defensive players in the league who prides himself on being an excellent tackler. When that happened, and I watched the replay, and I saw him, he'll continue to roll with Carson's knee leg in his grasp, I thought at that moment, I'd seen that before. I saw that when I played. They never called it back in the day.
Right.
And then later on, Hill hit Russell high, helmet to helmet, and was not called on it, and knocked Russell off his feet. I mean, really smacked him. So that at that point, then I started to think, well, that the first time wasn't just an accident. That's the way this guy plays. So, you know, short of saying to your other players, okay, somebody go out there and hit him and make him pay the price, you don't do that. You let the league take care of it. We'll see probably tomorrow, maybe Friday, if he gets fined, even though no penalty was called on either of those hits. I got a feeling that the league is going to look at that real closely. And now you just hope that Chris is going to be able to play this week, and if he doesn't, then perhaps the next week. You know, this might just be too soon for that knee to be ready to go. But, you know, Chris Carson's a tough kid, and I know he wants to play, but this is a game all the way across country, 10 a.m., against an AFC opponent, and if it means holding out another week so you can come back and play on Monday night against the Minnesota Vikings when you're, you know, a conference matchup, then I'd say, a Sunday night game, I beg your pardon, against the Minnesota Vikings, then then you say, okay, maybe we hold him out.
You know, and lastly, you kind of alluded to it there. This is always kind of a tricky trip for a West Coast team, multiple time zones all the way to the Southeast. The Miami's just won their first game against an Jacksonville team. So what's the buzz on the type of a Dolphin team that Seattle's going to square off with in that early slot Sunday?
Well, it's funny about that team. First of all, they're very well coached. Coach Cox is really good. He's got some good young players down there. He's been around the block. He learned at the knee of Bill Belichick. So he's going to be coaching up his guys to be ready for the Seahawks. And, of course, he's going to look at what Brian Flores, I beg your pardon, not Brian Cox, Brian Flores. He's going to be looking at what the Seahawks did against the Patriots, because that's exactly how he coaches his team. Now, he doesn't have necessarily the players, although he's got some of the guys who are free agents that came over from New England. But he's got, you know, Fitzmagic, who really can make some plays. He's been around, 16 seasons or something like that. So it's going to be fun to watch, I think. I just checked, in fact, a little while ago. It's supposed to be 86 or 87 degrees, and the humidity almost 80%, and a 50% chance of rain in Miami on Sunday. Now, I've played in Miami. I've played in that kind of heat and humidity, and it just drains you. So the Falcons, Dolphins will have certainly the edge in that respect, because they're playing down there. So, you know, you don't know what to expect till you get down there. I would hope that, you know, we score early and often and force those guys to play catch up, as we have everybody we've played this season. Now you can only hope that they don't catch up, which is what most of the other guys, most of the other teams have done.
All right, folks, he's Steve Rabel. He'll be behind the mic again as Seattle's at Miami, 10 o'clock kickoff. We've got it right here on KUJZ. You can follow Steve on Twitter. The handle is at RabelCairo7. Steve, thank you so much for finding some time. Love the work you guys do. Always a top-notch listen. Be well, be safe, and look forward to catching up again later in the season.
Steve, thanks very much, and you be safe as well.
All right, take it easy.